The Come This Far podcast is brought to you by ADSuits.com. AD Suits designs the most affordable, inexpensive, high-quality men's suits, tuxedos, shirts, ties, and accessories that you can buy online. AD Suits believes in a down-to-earth approach to men's fashion and that the most stylish suits should be accessible to everyone. Looking sharp shouldn't cost a fortune. How do they do it? They have amazing suits starting at $39. I know it sounds like a gimmick. Trust me, I thought it was too. When I started running for office, when I became an elected official, I had like one suit. I would wear it to church, I would wear it to funerals, but I realized that running for office and being an elected official, I had to have more than one suit, but I didn't want to pay $500 for a suit or even $100 for a suit. So I went to adsuits.com. I found it on Google, and guess what? They're my favorite suits. I wear them all the time. I have like five of them because they cost $49 each. Some of them cost $39 each. How do they do it? Well, by manufacturing their own suits, they cut out any middleman. And also by operating only online, no brick and mortar stores, they eliminate expenses. So in the end, they can bring you a nice suit for under $50. And they're not cheap. They're not cheap. They feel the same as my $500 suit that was gifted to me by my father. Okay? They are amazing. And you don't feel like you have to be restricted, because if you get it messed up, if you tear it, if you get it stained, it's only $40. Who cares? Throw it away and buy a new one. That's the way suits should be. And they should be comfortable, and they should be well fitted, and they should look nice, but they should not be a fortune to wear. So do yourself a favor, go to adsuits.com today. You won't be sorry.
First of all, on the issue of critical race theory, et cetera, I'll obviously have to get much smarter on whatever the theory is. But I do think it's important, actually, for those of us in uniform to be open-minded and be widely read. And the United States Military Academy is a university. And it is important that we train and we understand. And I want to understand white rage. And I'm white. And I want to understand it. So what is it that caused thousands of people to assault this building and try to overturn the Constitution of the United States of America? What caused that? I want to find that out. I want to maintain an open mind here, and I do want to analyze it. It's important that we understand that, because our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and Guardians, they come from the American people. So it is important that the leaders, now and in the future, do understand it. I've read Mao Zedong. I've read Karl Marx. I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me a communist. So what is wrong with understanding, having some situational understanding about the country for which we are here to defend? And I personally find it offensive that we are accusing the United States military, our general officers, our commissioned, non-commissioned officers of being, quote, woke or something else, because we're studying some theories that are out there. That was started at Harvard Law School years ago, and it proposed that there were laws in the United States, antebellum laws prior to the Civil War, that led to a power differential with African Americans that were 3/4 of a human being when this country was formed. And then we had a Civil War and Emancipation Proclamation to change it. And we brought it up to the Civil Rights Act in 1964. It took another 100 years to change that. So look it, I do want to know. And it matters to our military and the discipline and cohesion of this military.
You know, some people think that I tell my story to get praise or to, you know, be on the news or be on shows like this. And you don't realize how difficult it is to become so vulnerable and to open your family up to that scrutiny. But I know how important it is, because when a news segment airs, I get hundreds and sometimes thousands of comments and messages and people who are suffering in silence, and they tell me how much inspiration they get. And so I don't want my struggles and everything that I've suffered to be in vain. Mm. Like, I really believe that God gives people struggles and trials to overcome them and then to be that hope and help to other people.
And a Safford City Council member is suspending his campaign for Congress.
A Safford City Councilman has suspended his campaign for Congress after suffering a heroin overdose.
His name is Chris Taylor. You may have actually know the name very well. It's been very publicized here in the Arizona media and the Arizona press.
Chris Taylor was running for the Republican nomination to challenge Democrat Tom O'Halloran this November.
And tonight, Chris Taylor says he is seeking treatment for substance abuse.
We first met Chris Taylor in 2017 as we dug in on the opioid problem plaguing the eastern Arizona city of Safford.
In a previous campaign ad, Taylor opened up about his struggles with opioid addiction after two tours in Afghanistan.
Taylor, a veteran who fought off addiction to open his own treatment center, was poised to be the success story for Safford. But he went backwards as old demons resurfaced last week. A relapse that resulted in an overdose. In a statement to suspend his congressional campaign, Taylor was very direct, saying, quote, "I'm not going to hide from this. I'm not ashamed of what happened. I wish to sincerely apologize to the amazing people who have supported me. It's a haunting reminder of a dark past that will always be looking over the shoulder of a bright future."
All right, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. First of all, I just want to say I have been on a little sabbatical for the last several weeks and months. Lots of stuff going on in my life. All good. Very busy. And I just haven't had the time necessary to commit to this podcast, at least at the rate that I would like to, but I'm back and back in action here. The clip you just heard was the United States House of Representatives Armed Services Committee, of which, the weasel himself, Matt Gaetz. I'm not sure how he ever made his way to such an important committee as the House Armed Services Committee. I'm even more confused as to why he continues to sit on any committee, but definitely the House Armed Services Committee. He showed in that exchange with the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, and the National Treasurer, the Joint Chiefs Chairman, General Milley. I literally, I'm not over exaggerating when I say this. Watching that and watching Matt Gaetz squirm and shake his head after General Milley just absolutely destroyed him in the most statesman and diplomatic way a true warrior can do. It literally made my year. It was just the best response that one could have to such a ludicrous waste of time that Matt Gaetz continues to heap on the backs of his colleagues and the backs of gentlemen and women that have very important things to do. And he is wasting their time with this ludicrous insanity.
In my previous discussions with service members and particularly officers, I would hear about complaints over parts not arriving on time, long deployments, and in my more recent discussions with those officers, the number one issue that they raised to me with concern, often unable to speak publicly for fear of the type of retribution that Lieutenant Colonel Lohmeyer faced, they say that your stand down regarding extremism did not help our military, it hurt the military. And I want to share with you that perspective, that it caused service members to otherize one another. It impaired group cohesion. And interesting to me is that I've heard those sentiments most frequently from units that are majority-minority, that this was not particularly helpful. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to maybe share with us more specificity regarding the definitions that seem to be a challenge when Ms. Hartzler was asking questions. How should the Department of Defense think about critical race theory?
Could I make a comment, Secretary? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm very limited on my time, General Milley.
Well, I just want to make a comment. That the feedback,
well, I know, but I've asked the question to Secretary Austin.
I don't know what the issue of critical race theory is and what the relevance here in with the department. We do not teach critical race theory. We don't embrace critical race theory. And I think that's a spurious conversation. And so we are focused on extremist behaviors and not ideology, not people's thoughts, not people's political orientation. Behaviors is what we're focused on. And one final point, and thanks for your anecdotal input, but I would say that I have gotten 10 times that amount of input, 50 times that amount of input on the other side that have said, hey, we're glad to have had the ability to have a conversation with ourselves and with our leadership. And that's what we need to make sure.
And again, reclaiming my time, Mr. Secretary, it may be that you're receiving that input in the ratios you describe because it was your directive. It may be that people are concerned about criticizing your decision because Lieutenant Colonel Lohmeyer was not relieved of his command for his actions. He was not relieved of his command because of poor performance regarding his duties. He was relieved of his command precisely because of his thoughts and because of his critique of critical race theory. It is particularly helpful that you have said that the Department of Defense does not embrace critical race theory and that you think the discussion is not appropriate. I would suggest that it is the ideology that is not appropriate. And it is particularly concerning to me that you have hired a critical race theorist to give you advice on personnel matters. And that person is Bishop Garrison. And I would particularly observe that on July 27th, 2019, Bishop Garrison tweeted regarding former President Trump, he's dragging a lot of bad actors out into the sunlight, normalizing their actions. And here's the relevant part. If you support the president, you support that. There is no room for nuance in this. There is no more, but I'm not like that talk. And then he replies to his own tweet with what seems to be a very ethno-nationalist hashtag, hashtag Black44. Could you enlighten us as to what advice Mr. Garrison has given you? And are you concerned that while you testify publicly to our committee that the department doesn't embrace critical race theory, you have hired someone who is precisely a critical race theorist?
This is the first I've ever heard Mr. Garrison be described as a critical race theorist. So this is new.
And, I'm sure that did you review his tweets before you hired him personally? Did you review his tweets before you hired him?
I did not personally review his tweets.
I would just ask that maybe that be helpful. Is there anything you can share in just these final seconds regarding any advice he's given you?
Let me just share one other thing that you brought up, Congressman, about the input that comes to me. You know, I trust my leadership from top to bottom that they will give me fair and balanced and unvarnished input. And for you to say that people are telling me what I want to hear, I get it. But I'm smart enough to know
that does happen.
And, you know, maybe they're telling you what you want to hear.
You see what I mean? This hearing was with the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It was in the House Armed Services Committee, and it was supposed to be about budgetary items. The most important thing that the role that Congress is supposed to have in giving the leadership of our military the resources necessary for our warriors to defend our nation and to take the fight to the enemy that wants nothing more than to destroy this nation. And this bozo is taking up all of his allotted time to get some sound bites on Tucker Carlson or a front page in Breitbart.com. When are enough people going to be fed up with this kind of lunacy? I'm not even talking about his premises and the things that he likes to make important in his life and his service, but the fact that he keeps using the people's time to wage this culture war and to pad his campaign donation account. Secretary Austin, who himself is a retired general, was equally as impressive in his response as was General Mark Milley. I just can't tell you how much I enjoyed it. Matt Gaetz, man, get a life. When we come back from this short little break, we'll talk a little bit more about critical race theory and in general and in the relation to the United States military. Thanks for listening to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor.
Ivy League educated 40-year veteran. Those on the right didn't take kindly to the Joint Chiefs' rebuke of Republican attacks on critical race theory. General Milley's remarks elicited this attack on Fox News tonight.
Mark Milley is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He didn't get that job because he's brilliant or because he's brave or because the people who know him respect him. He is not, and they definitely don't. Milley got the job because he is obsequious. He knows who to suck up to, and he's more than happy to do it. Feed him a script, and he will read it. Hard to believe that man wears a uniform. He's that unimpressive. Notice he never defined white rage, and we should know what it is. What is white rage? He's not just a pig. He's stupid.
With us to talk about what we've just witnessed is General Barry McCaffrey, decorated combat veteran of Vietnam, former battlefield commander in the Persian Gulf, former cabinet member, former member of the National Security Council. He retired, by the way, as a four-star general in the U.S. Army. General, for the civilians watching you and me tonight, please let them know what they should know about your friend and your fellow four-star General Milley.
You know, I've known Mark Milley since he was a one-star in Afghanistan. I watched him in combat. I've been very closely associated with him over the years. It is my objective view that he's one of the most effective combat leaders we've had since World War II. He actually is brilliant. He's a Princeton grad, world-class athlete at Princeton, hockey player. He is incredibly brave. He was involved in shootouts in downtown Sadr City, armed with a pistol. He actually is widely respected in the armed forces. He spent a good bit of his army career, military career, in combat. So, you know, that Fox TV interview is like a world turned upside down. I was very proud of him. He was very direct. And by the way, he's one of the bluntest people I've seen in uniform. He does not suffer fools lightly. And he and Secretary Austin, I think, did a remarkable job just speaking directly to the challenge. We do have institutional racism baked into America's DNA. We do have to address it. For God's sakes, we got 8 Army posts named after Confederate generals who fought to preserve slavery. So We got to get into this subject. We will work it out. In many ways, the armed forces is the least racist institution in this country. But we got a long way to go, and Mark Milley is the guy to help us get there.
General, in my experience, and I defer to yours, Fox News is on the lion's share of the televisions in the mess halls, ready rooms, and lounges in bases, foreign and domestic. What would it do to the ranks to hear a Fox News anchor call the chairman of the Joint Chiefs a pig and stupid?
Well, it's a terrible gesture to make on the part of anybody about a public servant, never mind one of Mark Milley's dedication and talent. Look, I've never bought into the notion that the armed forces is rife with extremism because they're watching Fox TV. I don't believe that at all. 40% of the armed forces are minorities of one sort or another. It's an apolitical institution. Certainly the officer corps is. They will not tell you who they voted for. They're prohibited by law from all sorts of actions. So I think that the country ought to have a lot of confidence that if you go to an infantry battalion in the 82nd Airborne Division or a Marine battalion at Quantico, you're going to find dedicated people. 60,000 killed and wounded in the war on terror fighting to protect this country. So it's a terrible insult to attack these people who are out there trying to protect America.
There's also this, let me play this clip for you. This was Fox News last evening.
The idea that we are sending our tax dollars to this military to an attempt to weed out so-called extremists, which just means conservative evangelical, as far as I can tell. We're paying for that? Why is Congress not saying we're not going to give you a penny until all of this is eradicated from the military budget? Nothing. This is my offer to you. Nothing. That's what I would say.
So, General, how will that message land to the forward deployed who owe everything they have to the Home Office at the Pentagon? How does that comment strike you?
It's sheer twaddle. It doesn't mean anything. I find this hard to believe that somebody of obvious intelligence and experience would make that kind of a statement. The defense of the American people is the primary responsibility of Congress under Article 1 of the Constitution. The armed forces are the most powerful single force on the face of the earth, 2.1 million men and women. And they're prepared to defend America both internally and externally from those who would threaten the Constitution. We got to respect them. We're making our reenlistment quotas. We're attracting some of the best top 20% of American youth into our ranks. We do have to guard against extremists in the force. We got to keep the military. People with badges and guns and uniforms need to be carefully observed by the authorities. So, you know, that whole interview there is just the stuff of twits.
That was Fox News' response to defending the weasel, Matt Gaetz, and attacking a national treasure and hero like General Milley. It was just disgusting. Props to General Barry McCaffrey, who said it perfectly as well. So now we have the so-called Back the Blue party attacking police officers who defended the Capitol during the insurrection. Now they are assaulting the military, the leadership of the military, true American heroes. It's just unfathomable. I just cannot believe what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing. the world is turned upside down.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. So let's get into a little bit what critical race theory is and what it isn't, really.
The critical race theory and the whole debate now, this manufactured outrage and from the far right and from opponents of this righteous movement to have equality and justice and to teach our children history. And what we're going to talk about here in the next few minutes is, what is critical race theory? Why is it now the conservative right's new drum that they are banging, that they're pounding? I heard it the other day. I don't know who said it, but I guess Dr. Seuss just didn't, the outrage on Dr. Seuss just didn't have the longevity that they had hoped for. Didn't resonate as well as they thought it would. And so now they're on to the next manufactured outrage and crisis. And so what is critical race theory? The fact that this is, and I think General Milley put it perfectly, what is wrong with learning a theory? And the fact that there's such outrage over this right now, would you be surprised to know that critical race theory is not even part of any curriculum in any school in the United States of America? So the fact that our children are being race baited and brainwashed and taught to hate themselves simply because they're white, this is just completely fabricated currently. I wish I could say that I was surprised, but I'm not. So what is critical race theory? I know by now all of you have heard the name, you've heard the talking heads, you've heard the bozos like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and all of these lunatics switch to this talking point, this disinformation campaign to get our minds off of the real issues that we face, because, like always, the Republicans have failed to actually govern and to help fix any of the real problems that we face. Critical race theory is an academic movement of civil rights scholars and activists in the United States who simply seek to critically examine the law as it intersects with issues of race and to challenge the mainstream approaches to racial justice. Critical race theory examines social, cultural, and legal issues as they relate to race and racism. This is something that originated in the 1970s at Harvard Law School. It emerged as a movement in the 1980s, reworking theories of critical legal studies, or CLS, with simply more focus on the racial aspect. Critical race theory sees racism as systemic and institutional, rather than just a collection of individual prejudices. And that's important, because that's what people on the right will say. Yeah, racism exists, but it's not widespread or it's not institutional. There will always be people, hateful people that are bigots and that are racist, but that's not what's happening in America. And we've had this discussion before on this podcast. To their point, that is true. If the problem of racism and racial inequality, particularly as it has to do with the justice system in our country, if it was such an explicit and you know, widespread racism, like an example would be like if every prosecutor or every judge in America was proclaimed to be a member of a white supremacist group, right? And it was clear that these people making decisions on charging individuals of black skin or brown skin, and they were outward with everything, like, yeah, we're putting these black people away in prison, and we're not afraid to tell you that we're racist, that they need to be locked up. Yeah, of course that's not happening. But again, that doesn't mean that there's not a major problem. It's the implicit biases that are ingrained in us through our social constructs. I understand that a theory of this complexity is very hard for people like Matt Gaetz to wrap their head around, because it's not a simple, you know, no pun intended, it's not a simple black and white issue, right? So instead of trying to learn and grow and be, as General Milley said, wide read or well read, they don't have the time for that. They don't have the capacity intellectually to spend on learning about something like this, to getting to the actual root of the problems that exist. So it's easier for them to make this a political issue, which of course everything is politicized, and this is just the newest manufactured outrage of the enemy in their eyes, the anyone who is not completely aligned with their ideologies, which is in recent years has proven to be not really an ideology at all, except of supporting and defending their personal savior and worshiping him, no matter what he does or says. And to that point, the supporters and voters of people like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene, likewise, have even less intellectual capacity to even begin to think about something this complex. There's a reason that this critical race theory was developed at Harvard, right? Harvard Law School. It takes people with an actual brain to discuss these things and to theorize like scientists do. Essentially, this is social science, right? They are social scientists that are simply putting forward a theory and wanting to examine it in a critical way, using critical thinking and data and evidence and facts. This is not some left-wing conspiracy to brainwash anybody. But that's what Mr. Gates will tell you. Which, by the way, I don't know how he is still serving as a United States congressman with all of the allegations and evidence, really, of gross misconduct. The debate on whether he broke laws or that he will be charged with sex trafficking or sexual assault on an underage girl or whatever, that's still to be determined. And of course, he is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. I completely agree with that. But the facts are clear that he has engaged in highly suspect behavior that should not be allowed in the United States Congress. Somebody with accountability and taking responsibility, which he is supposedly all about, right, would resign after the evidence of him paying somebody for sex with women, with a Venmo trail. Anyway, that's not what this podcast is about, but it did make my year to see him put in his place in a way that really is rare, because when it's his turn to speak on these hearings, on these congressional hearings, he won't let the people that he is supposed to be questioning, he usually won't let them even answer the question, which you heard how he would not let General Milley speak. So thankfully, another congresswoman allowed him a few minutes of her allotted time, and it was glorious. So critical race theory sees racism as systemic. It also views race as a socially constructed identity, which serves to oppress non-white people. The theory emphasizes how racism and disparate racial outcomes can be the result of complex, changing, and often subtle social and institutional dynamics, rather than explicit and intentional prejudices by individuals. So that right there is exactly what I'm talking about. But that is too complex for some people to understand what that even means. Nobody is saying that the issue of racism and disparate outcomes in our justice system is the result of intentional prejudices by individuals like my example. If a prosecutor was an avowed member of a white supremacist group, and he was clearly going about his duties in unequal way. So say the prosecutor, this hypothetical prosecutor has 100 cases of people that have committed the same crime, often drug crimes, right? Let's say that this, let's just for the sake of argument, put it to 10. So there's 10 cases that this prosecutor, this hypothetical prosecutor, is prosecuting. Five of the people are white. Five of the people are black. All young men in their 20s or early 30s, let's say. The crimes are possession of a narcotic drug. Okay. Same amount of drugs, same charge, same class of felony that the people are charged with. The five black people get charged with, so all 10 people, five black and five white, get arrested for the possession of narcotic drugs. Let's say 3 grams of heroin. A little over $100 worth of heroin, right? Somebody that has somebody's addicted to heroin, this amount of heroin would last them a day or two, okay? When the report gets from the police to the prosecutor, this hypothetical prosecutor who is a known member of a white supremacist group, this prosecutor decides to add the charges of intent to distribute, because in most states, the threshold is very low. Instead of being charged with the possession of the 3 grams of heroin, a little over $100 worth, the prosecutor can decide that that is enough amount to be charged with intent to sell, not just personal possession. The five white people are not charged with intent to sell this amount. And in fact, it's such a low amount, and these five white people come from good homes, 2 parents, upper middle class. He decides to make a plea deal to throw out the felony, lessen it to a misdemeanor if they plead guilty to the charge. The five white guy, or black guys? No, they get more felonies placed on their heads because they don't have the same background. Of course, this hypothetical prosecutor, who is a known and vocal racist, that's easy to see how he made those decisions, right? The five black guys are drug dealers, criminals, a menace to our streets. They need to go away. Five white guys, well, they suffer from addiction. They're nonviolent. They look very nice in their suit and tie in front of the judge. If every prosecutor was like this hypothetical prosecutor, it would be an easy fix. This prosecutor is unfit to serve in this position. What critical race theory says or theorizes is that the same outcomes end up happening in an unintentional manner from prosecutors and judges who mean well, who don't harbor racial thoughts. They are good and decent, honorable men and women who would never look at these 10 cases and outwardly make these same decisions because they are vocal racists. but because of hidden or implicit biases that exist in our society, more often than not, the same outcomes happen. And why is that? The prosecutor means well. Why do they see a young black man as more of a threat to the community? These are questions that we should be asking. No, there is not widespread vindictiveness based on the color of people's skin. But does it really matter if the outcomes are the same? So critical race theory seeks or attempts to break all of this down using critical thinking, evidence-based tactics, data, hard facts, to analyze why there is so often injustices, an unequal application of our laws, and then presumably, how can we change these outcomes? How can we change this from happening? That is literally all critical race theory is. So don't let people like Matt Gaetz hijack your brain by telling you that the mainstream media and the far right liberals and this grand conspiracy of you know, race baiters and all of this stuff, they're trying to move this radical thinking to brainwash America, to destroy America. Why, and what General Milley says, why is it bad to want to learn about theories? He said, I've read Karl Marx, I've read Mao, I've read Lenin. That doesn't make me a communist. That makes me understand history and why communism doesn't work and why it is evil. But if they banned learning about communism because it's just so evil, we can't teach our children. We can't even teach our children about this. This is so evil. How are they going to learn that communism is not the way to go? Right? It doesn't make you a communist because you are well read on the tenets of communism and the history and the ideology of it. And what I'm about to read here proves exactly what I'm saying. This is a post from today by Glenn Beck. It's an article. I'm just going to read what his post is. It's the title of the article. He says, after banning critical race theory, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida signs a law requiring all students to learn, quote, evils of communism, and quote, the real patriots who escaped it. My comment on the post, why not apply the same exact logic to racism? Why can't children learn about the evils of racism and the real patriots that are still fighting to escape it? Do you see what is so preposterous about this? banning a theory, but then mandating that another theory is taught to every child so that they can learn the evils of that theory and that they can celebrate the real patriots who escaped it. But at the same time, banning another theory because it's going to brainwash our children to hate America. I just don't understand. I just don't get it. I wish I did. I wish I knew. 99% of the people that are vocal opponents to critical race theory have absolutely zero understanding of what critical race theory even is. It just sounds like it's a liberal conspiracy, a construct to brainwash our children, because people like Matt Gaetz and others use their platform to tell you that. I'm so grateful that a man of General Milley's standing stood up and said, no, Mr. Gaetz, no. And this brings me to another thing that I am very upset about and outraged about. This whole idea that the United States military, the most lethal and best fighting force that has ever existed in the long history of human beings, is somehow weakened and being destroyed by, quote, wokeness. It's just the most ludicrous thing that anybody could ever say. And only someone like Matt Gaetz, who has no frame of reference, even spending one day in service in the military. This only somebody like that could even suggest that is what's happening. People that serve in the military and that go and fight our enemies and defend our nation. I'm talking about the rank and file, the actual troops that we send into battle and to defend our nation and to defend other weak set of people around the world who are being taken advantage of by evil forces. They are not the least bit affected by any of this nonsense that all of us here in the civilian world are affected by every day, from the media, from the political divisions, from all of that. I can honestly tell you that there is discussions and lively debates and you know, soldiers are very well informed and like General Milley said, well read, widely read. But when you are sent into a dangerous situation, none of that even has the slightest bit of space in a soldier's mind. I don't care who my teammate from my left and my right voted for. I might know, but I don't care when the bullets start flying. you fight for your brothers and sisters on your left and your right. This idea that because different measures are being put in place and different tactics to weed out the kind of extremism and hatefulness that influenced thousands of people to storm the Capitol, to undermine the Constitution, that is not a bad thing. Because there were active duty soldiers that were part of that conspiracy. And there were many more veterans that were. So after that, the Secretary of Defense instituted what's known in the military and veteran communities as a stand down. We're going to stop for a predetermined amount of time. It's usually 24 hours from the training schedule or whatever else is going on. And we're going to talk about and analyze this extremist threat that just materialized at the symbol of our democracy. And we're going to train our commanders and our officers, our non-commissioned officers, to identify behaviors that would hinder the mission. In a way that would weaken the defense of our nation. Because if somebody that's in a military unit is influenced in such a way that they literally believe that President Biden is not legitimate, that he did not legitimately win, so therefore he is not legitimately my commander in chief. If he orders me into a war, no matter how justified the action is, I'm not going to fight because he's not my commander in chief. And even more so, I'm going to go attack the very symbol of our democracy because the people in the building are trying to steal my country. I think that behavior would weaken a unit's ability to defend our nation. What doesn't weaken our ability to continue to be the best fighting force in the history of the world is taking steps to make sure that the marginalized groups in our ranks, in our forces, feel like they are treated equally and that their life matters the same. And it's not like there's not evidence of a long history of our country that was not the case. In an explicit and outward way, like World War II, when black soldiers were not allowed to fight in most cases with white units. And even when the black units proved their heroism, proved their love of freedom, many received the Medal of Honor for their actions. When they returned home, they did not get a ticker tape parade. They did not get to celebrate in Times Square. They still were not able to drink from the same water fountains. They were still not able to hold the same jobs. They were still not able to be treated like a human being. And so now the issue that exists, just like in our justice system and in our society, is not as easy to weed out and to identify, because it's not explicit. All units are integrated, of course. There are too many black generals to count. There's been major improvements. And like General Milley said, over the last several hundred years of our existence, we have made progress. But to say that today everything is perfect, and any inference of any other idea should be banned because it's just evil to try to brainwash our children into create divisions in our military, it's complete and utter nonsense. And unlike Matt Gaetz, I speak from experience. The recent extremism stand down had absolutely zero bearing on any rank and file soldier. Yeah, probably a lot of them thought, oh man, here we go again. Another crazy thing that the higher ups are making us do. I'm sure that there was some rifle ranges and maybe airborne operations that might have been put on hold for a day or two. So, and maybe, you know, some soldiers were really looking forward to going and shooting a couple thousand rounds at the range that day. And so, yeah, there was probably people that were like, all right, what is this? You know, but that's where it would end, right? It has no effect on our troops' ability to accomplish any mission that we give them. And this is only imagined in a mind as delusional as Matt Gaetz and other people who, despite having ample reasons and opportunities to serve our country, since we've been at war against an existential threat for the last 20 years, people like Matt Gaetz didn't serve. So now, because he was able to use his father's wealth and standing in the political arena in Florida, he's been able to make his way to the United States Congress and somehow weasel his way into one of the most powerful committees in the House, the Armed Services Committee. Now he gets to sit there and grill legitimate heroes like General Austin and General Milley. And he gets to raise millions of dollars for his reelection campaign based on these little hot takes and these little clips that will be spread across the conservative media. And he'll continue to get his media hits on Fox News and Newsmax and OAN and all of these other propaganda outlets. and he gets to stand up there and tell somebody as accomplished as General Milley and General Austin, Secretary of Defense Austin, that all of my friends that I talk to that are in the military, they tell me that literally, Mr. Gates, how many friends can you really have that serve in the military? Say it's even 100. That's quite a big sample size there, Mr. Gates. Forget about the over 60 years of combined military service between the two gentlemen that you're grilling on this issue. Just think about how many people, peers, and people that these two men in their accomplished military service in their careers have associated with and have been friends with and have surrounded themselves with. I think their sample size is a little bit bigger than some weasel politician that uses his status on the Armed Services Committee to talk to a couple officers in the military. But that's beside the point that I'm trying to make here. In the field of legal studies, critical race theory emphasizes that merely making laws colorblind on paper may not be enough to make the application of the laws colorblind. Ostensibly, colorblind laws can be applied in racially discriminatory ways. Intersectionality, which emphasizes that race can intersect with other identities, such as gender and class, and I would add other marginalized status like drug addict, or drug dealer, quote unquote, to produce complex combinations of power and disadvantage. This is a key concept in critical race theory. Academic critics of critical race theory argue that it relies on social constructionism, elevates storytelling over evidence and reason, rejects the concepts of truth and merit, and opposes liberalism. Since 2020, conservative lawmakers in the United States have sought to ban or restrict critical race theory instruction along with other anti-racism programs. Critics of these efforts say the lawmakers have poorly defined or misrepresented the tenets and importance of critical race theory and that the goal of the law is to silence broader discussions of racism, equality, social justice, and the history of race. Imagine that. Lawmakers have poorly defined or misrepresented the tenets and importance of critical race theory. That's exactly what has happened and is happening. And most of us eat it up and question nothing about the motives behind people like Matt Gaetz. This is an article from Vox.com. It says, what the hysteria over critical race theory is really all about. Conservatives have launched a growing disinformation campaign around the academic concept. It's an attempt to push back against progress. Watching the news or browsing social media, it would be easy to think that critical race theory is a complicated, controversial, or new idea. But critical race theory, created four decades ago by legal scholars, is an academic framework for examining how racism is embedded in America's laws and institutions. It is just now receiving widespread attention because it has morphed into a catch-all category, one used by Republicans who want to ban anti-racist teachings and trainings in classrooms and workplaces across the country. Over the past 6 months, Republicans in more than two dozen states have proposed bills that aim to stymie educational discussions about race, racism, and systemic oppression in the U.S., potentially eliminating the conversations altogether. But in Ron DeSantis's case, you want to ban that, but then mandate that all children learn about the evils of communism and celebrate the patriots, the real patriots that escaped communism. Again, I don't want to be a broken record, but like General Milley said, simply teaching and learning about a theory or about an idea does not make one a proponent of that idea. It all began as racial justice protests took off across the country in the summer of 2020, and a Fox News story fashioned critical race theory as a boogeyman. Though the school of thought had been relatively obscure outside of academia, a conservative campaign was launched against it. And by September, then-President Donald Trump had signed an executive order restricting implicit bias and diversity trainings by government agencies. His exit from office didn't put an end to the assault on critical race theory, though. It only amplified it. By January, GOP lawmakers began quietly drafting and introducing bills that mirrored one another in an effort to stop schools from teaching about racism or any topics that confront America's history of racial and gender oppression. While they don't all name critical race theory, which in and of itself is not being taught in any K-12 school, the new state bills rest on the same foundation, the desire to broadly stop teaching and training on divisive concepts. Many focus on public grade schools, while some target community colleges, universities, state government entities, contracts, grant recipients, and private schools. A bulk of the bills include vague language, calling for a ban on what they call, quote, race and sex stereotyping, or race or sex scapegoating, meaning they want to stop instruction that makes value judgments about men and white people. As Russell Vaught, a conservative activist whose organization has written model legislation for these bills, told Vox, some bills specifically want to prevent the teaching of the New York Times 1619 Project, a sweeping collection of essays and literary works that center Black Americans' founding contributions to the country via enslavement, which conservatives have scrutinized it since it was first published in 2019. Others reflect calls by Trump for, quote, patriotic education, or instruction that doesn't stray from the traditional telling of American history. Think the American Revolution, Thomas Jefferson, and the fight to make this the greatest country in the world. Together, the bills amount to a Republican scare tactic and disinformation campaign, and critical race theory has, in some circles, become a dog whistle that communicates resistance toward racial justice progress. So far, about 10 of these bills have passed through the state legislatures, and about 24 others are in committee. Several have died. Even though legal experts told Vox that many of these bills are likely to be shot down on free speech grounds, hysteria around the term critical race theory has already caused chaos in local school boards, at local community colleges, and for educators who want to teach students all of American history, even the parts about systemic oppression that may cause discomfort. This whole idea, unquote from the article, this is me speaking. This whole idea that we can only teach our children about the positive and the patriotic stories of our history. It reeks an awful lot like the Soviet Union or the Taliban or Iraqi schools during the reign of Saddam Hussein or the North Korean schools that only teach history about the Kim dynasty. And they say things like, the founder of the Kim dynasty, Kim Jong-un's grandfather, was a god who never needed to use the restroom. And they teach things like Kim Jong-un is the best basketball player in the history of the world. They ban anything that even remotely sounds like a negative story about the dictators and his relatives, his ancestors. Now, here in the United States of America, we do have an awful lot to be proud of. The American Revolution, people like Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and all everything that we learn in schools. These men and women who have contributed to American history should be celebrated and should be looked to as role models, as heroes. But we should also tell of their human fallibilities. That they were not perfect, exalted beings. That they were human beings. And they were the product of their eras. And that they lived in a time where their parents taught them what their grandparents had taught their parents. But that doesn't mean that they're evil or that they should be, their statues should be torn down or they should be, that our children should not get to celebrate them. No. By teaching unbiased history, real history about the times and the people that made history, teaching them about fallibilities and about weaknesses and about being humans would allow our children to identify more closely with these individuals, to learn about all the great things they did, and to not make some of the same mistakes. What is wrong with that? What is wrong with that? I just don't understand it. I really don't. When you're really serious, the article goes on about addressing a problem. The last thing you do is punish people for building the tools to see the problem, to analyze the problem, and to develop the capacity to remove the problem. Legal scholar and founding critical race theorist Kimberly Crenshaw told Vox. I'm certain there's no relation to Congressman Dan Crenshaw here. She says, quote, "You can't fix a problem that you can't name. Racism is a problem in the United States. And conservatives don't want us to name it because they are uncomfortable with it." And I get that. I get that. Because they're uncomfortable with the idea that their ancestors may be somehow called into question. And that the people that they grew up learning were godlike figures. that were superhuman will somehow have their reputations and their history completely destroyed. And that's just not what's happening. To humanize men like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and all of them, it only allows us to let our children identify with them more closely and more realistically. We'll be right back after. So in closing, I just want to reiterate how important it is for each of us to think critically, to not be influenced by sound bites and hot takes by people like Matt Gaetz or Marjorie Taylor Greene, or their counterweights on the other fringe, on the other side. We don't have to see everything through a partisan lens. It just doesn't have to happen. And I know that it's hard for many people to believe or understand that they are influenced by what they consume in terms of media, in terms of people they associate with, in terms of anything that we are subjected to in our lives. I get it. We believe that we are not easily influenced. We believe that we have our own mind and that we make our own mind up. But when you only exist in the echo chamber, you are being influenced in a negative way because you've already made your mind up about something, because that is the spin or the talking point of the day by people that you support. I challenge each of you to actually dig deep into these things. Now, I'm not saying that I am a critical race theorist. I can't say that because I haven't studied it enough. But on that same token, I can't be against it. And I definitely can't support anybody who wants to ban the critical race theory, or any theory for that matter, from being taught, especially at the university level, of which West Point is a university. All you need to know on this subject in terms of where you should be is the post that I read from Glenn Beck, from what Governor DeSantis did. He signed a bill to ban critical race theory because of the evilness of it. And then in the same breath, signed a law that mandates or forces schools to teach the evils of communism and celebrate the real heroes that escaped it. Critical race theory and teaching about other perspectives of our history, our American history, does the same thing. It provides another perspective of our historical events and figures and times and eras so that we can teach our children to not make the same mistakes, and to celebrate the real heroes who have escaped and who are still trying to escape the evils of racism. But whatever you do, please don't be anti something without even knowing what it is. Just because some idiot that happened to have a platform tells you to do that. Enough with this idiocy, this lunacy, with this partisan lens for every single issue. There's a reason that critical race theory has been around since the 70s, but I guarantee you haven't heard the term critical race theory until this year, or maybe last year. Think why that is. Study and analyze why that is. And you will know that maybe there's something more to it. Thanks for listening to this new episode of the Come This Far podcast. It's great to be back, and I will be back in action again, putting out episodes as much as possible, but definitely trying for one or two a week. Thanks again for listening to the Come This Far podcast. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks, everybody.